Hi, this is Larry London. You're listening to Border Crossings here on VOA TV. We are joined today for our holiday special by one of the greats. He recently marked the 52nd anniversary now of American Pie, because
That's
it
right.
came out in 1971.
Yep.
And he's got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. He's been inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. There's not a thing that the man hasn't done. His voice and his music has been heard all around the world. We would like to welcome to the Voice of America, Don McLean. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Right now I'm kind of doing a little promotional work for a Christmas album I have out called Christmas Memories Remixed and Remastered. And soon I'll be coming out with a new album, American Boys. That will be in February. It's all done. And we have a documentary movie out, which is on Paramount Plus, called The Day the Music Died, The Story of Don McLean's American Pie. And so I've got a lot of things going on and a lot of touring planned. But right now I'm home for a while, which is very, very nice.
So how does it feel, Don McLean, when people like Tupac had said that they looked up to you and Drake has sampled your music? I mean, that's very R&B, hip hop, very different from the folk rock music you gave us in the 70s.
Well, I think it shows that those guys are looking around at everything. the Drake thing is one of the big mysteries, how he found the Primetime album, which is not an album that I, you know, is front and center for me, but one of my, an album I'm very proud of, but you know, again, it kind of got lost. He found that, and he found two songs on that album. One was called The Wrong Thing to Do, and the other was called When a Good Thing Goes Bad. And he used the lyrics from both of those songs to write Do It Wrong, which was one of his breakthrough monster hits. Mm. So I owe him a lot, and I owe him a big thank you. And I would love to talk to him sometime and find out how he discovered that record and that music.
That's for sure. Don McLean, who's come up through the years, you're 78 now, and you know, American Pie came out in 71, which would have made you how old when you wrote that song?
I don't know, 27, something like that, 26. Mm-hmm. But I had a 4 years of college. So I got a college degree, which a lot of my contemporaries were, you know, very talented and wanted to get into get going singing and making records. I got started going to college in 65 and just followed it. I said, well, I'm going to follow this through. I'm not going to just stop. So I made it all the way till I got the degree, and I'm glad I did. It was a very interesting experience. I learned a tremendous amount about a lot of things that I never would have taken the time to learn about. Mm-hmm. So I recommend it.
And, you know, I mean, you are not only a Grammy Award honoree, you've gotten the BBC Lifetime Achievement Award. The accolades go on and on. Your song American Pie is in the Library of Congress National Recording Registry, one of the top five songs of the 20th century. You know, 50 million albums sold. So this probably never gets old to you. I mean, you probably still love doing what you're doing at this age and at this stage of the game. You're still out there performing.
As long as I can hit the high notes, you know, I'll be out there. And if I don't look too decrepit, I'm holding it together. But I remember a funny story about Al Jolson, you know, near the end of his life. He used to do a lot of work for the troops, you know, the army. And he would go, when the Korean War was on, he would go and do shows with his piano player, I guess, Joe or Jim or Bill or whatever his name was. And one day he came off stage, he said, you know, Joe, I can't hit the high notes. So Joe said, so hit the low notes. So Jolson, if you remember near the end, he was always singing these really deep basso notes, you know.
Yes, yes, yes. That
so
is
we have to be adaptable in this business.
Yes, yeah. And I see so many artists that change the keys of the songs because
I know. Still sing them in the same keys.
Wow. Well, that's fantastic.
Everything's the same.
And one of the hardest songs to sing is a song you wrote, and it's been re-sung by Roy Orbison and so many others. It's Crying. I love that song.
Well, Roy and a guy named Joe Melson wrote that song. And Roy wrote a lot of songs with different people, and songs I didn't even realize. Some of the Buddy Holly tunes that I like, actually, Roy wrote. He wrote Claudette, which I love too. The Everly Brothers.
Everly Brothers, yeah. Roy, can you give us a couple choruses of Crying? I'd love to hear, unless you're not tuned for Crying.
When I saw you last night, you held my hand so tight. When you stopped to say hello, though you wished me well, you couldn't tell that I ain't been crying
over you.
Over you.
I love it.
Right.
Ah, there it is. I love it. I love it, Don McLean. The golden tones, the dulcet tones. The man who's given us so many hits. You wrote a song that Perry Como recorded.
Yes, it went like this.
All right.
And I love you so. People ask me how I've lived till now. I tell them I don't know. Yeah, that was the most recorded song I ever wrote. Yes, I know how lonely life can be. Shadows follow me. That was recorded a lot by Elvis Presley, you know, in the last year of his life. He sang it almost every night.
Hmm. Did he ask you for permission? Did he say, hey, Don, can I sing this
yes,
song?
Yes, he did. What Elvis did, and there's another story, you know, out there about Dolly Parton.
Mm-hmm.
He Elvis would have his people contact you, and they would say, well, in Dolly's case, this is her story, she said that, I think there's a song, I Will Always Love You.
And she said no, right? She said no, you can't do it.
Because he wanted the publishing.
Ah.
He wanted to own the song. And Dolly, being the brilliant businesswoman that she is, said, I'm sorry, but that ship has sailed.
Yes.
So, no. Well, and he didn't do the song. Same thing happened to me. He said, I want to do And I Love You So, but I want the publishing. I said, well, you can't have it. So he did the song. He did it. He recorded it and sang it every night and sang it so beautifully.
Mm.
It really is. The Elvis Presley story is amazingly simple and incredibly sort of sad. And it's amazing how many books they're written about. I've read them all. You know, it's just fascinating. This poor man doesn't have a secret left. You know, every single personal detail is known. He's just open. Been a sacrificial lamb almost to the on the altar of rock and roll, really. Mm-hmm. is Elvis Presley, because of the and he's as a result he's been vaccinated into the bloodstream of the nation, you know. Mm-hmm. He's so much flesh and blood there. It's not like a, you know, a cold person or a rich star or something. He's one of us, you know. He's part of us. And I'll tell you one quick funny story. I have a friend, and his father was the announcer for the Dorsey program. Yes. And he had a kinescope of Elvis doing Tutti Frutti or whatever. He used to run it in his living room. So when I was 7 or 8, no, I was 57, I was 11 years old, I would see Elvis on the big screen in his living room. And my friend and I were talking, and he said he was there when Elvis made his debut on the Dorsey program. Because he started with the lesser shows before he worked up to Sullivan. And my friend said, I thought he was a comedian. That's how different and weird what he was doing was compared to normal behavior.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? That was an amazing comment. I said, wow, that's an amazing thing that you just said, because everybody was out there, you know, straight suits, you know, rimless glasses, you know, all of a sudden, here's this guy doing, you know, what he did. And we take it for granted, but he thought he was a comedian of some sort.
Well, times have certainly changed. I mean, because back then there was a big issue about showing him below the waist because of his swivel moves. But now you can get away with just about anything on TV.
Yes, you can.
Don McLean's our guest. He is an icon and a legend and a good friend to the Voice of America. You talked about the troops. They're tuned in, by the way, and we're also on in 100 countries around the world. This is our holiday special. And I wanted to ask you, getting back to Christmas, what has been your favorite Christmas gift ever that you got?
I don't know. Well, it would have to be when I was very little. It would have been like a Gene Autry watch, or, you know, a six shooter or a bicycle or something like that. You know, those things you never forget.
So you were big into Westerns when you were growing up?
Yeah,
Gene Autry
oh, yeah.
and the six shooter.
Oh, yeah. I'm sort of a Western aficionado, if you will. I love the silent era with Tom Mix and the early talkies with the great Ken Maynard and Buck Jones, Tim McCoy, all those guys. I have huge libraries on this stuff. And that's why I made an album called the Western Album of this music, which I also love very much, the Sons of the Pioneers. And I'm very lucky because the record company that is putting out the Christmas album is also going to be releasing the new album in February, American Boys. And they are going to put an additional, I think it's 15 albums out that I own. And they're all going to be on vinyl, and they're all going to be CDs. And one of those will be the Western album, when you'll be able to get that album. And I created the cover. It was a collage that I made. If you ever see that album and you look at it, and it'd be nice to have it on vinyl and see a big version of that collage, because you can see all the Western stars that are in there all linked together. I'm in there on horseback too. You know, I put myself in there.
Trigger, right? You were riding on Trigger. I think that
no,
was the
horse. No, I had a white horse called Silver.
A Silver. So, I mean, you know, you have done so much, and you know, you also wrote a children's book. So,
well, I participated with interviews in the writing of the book. The book is called American Pie: A Fable, and it was really written by Judy Proffer, the wife of Spencer Proffer, who came into my life a few years ago, and he is the man behind the documentary movie that was so successful for us, The Day the Music Died, the story of Don McLean's American Pie, which is on Paramount Plus, and you can get if you want one of them, you can buy one on Amazon, as well as the Christmas album is on Amazon. Yes, he also came out with, got us a bookazine, you know, those things. Again, the same story of the creation of the song and so on. So he did everything. There's even a Broadway musical that is been contemplated for the future. And that would have, you know, probably 20 of my songs and probably be the same story, really. As the children's book and the movie, it's all about the same story, evolving from, you know, a young boy through a whole series of events in the 60s, and then writing this song and becoming part of the situation rather than just being an outsider.
Do you have any songs in your catalog that were a surprise hit to you that you didn't expect, like, you know, Vincent or something? Was there a song that you put out and you said, whoa, I never imagined it becoming as big as it did?
Crying was a very difficult song to get out. It came out on an album called Chain Lightning, which was released in 1978, and then nothing happened, you know. And in 1980, 2 years later, a disc jockey in Holland, of all places, started playing the version of Crying that was on there, and it became number one in Holland. Complete fluke. So I flew over to Holland and did some TV shows, and it went number one all over Europe. And then EMI had this. We didn't have a record label in the United States at that point. EMI, then it went number one all over the world. And then we got on a record company in the United States, Millennium Records. And they made it number one in a lot of markets and went number five, I think, nationally. And then we had a few more records. I made another album for them called Believers. And we re-recorded Castles in the Air, and that went top 10. And I did what I think is the best, one of the best records I ever made was Since I Don't Have You.
Mm.
And I had all the boys on that, the Jordanaires, and it's just pure fun. And I sang some of the highest notes I've ever hit. And I did it because I had had to stop singing for a month because I'd almost lost my voice on this British tour that I was on. And they would be, you know, they would be rugged for anybody. They would usually be 27 shows in 30 days, you know, but nothing like what Elvis Presley had to do with the international 60 shows in 30 days. Oh my yeah. God. You know, yep. If that doesn't make you a junkie, I don't know what would.
And done on a bus too. I mean, there was a lot of those bus tour where everybody's going city to city on a bus back in the day. Now it's private jets.
The bus tour in those days was very difficult.
Hmm.
You know, they rented a regular bus and you sat in seats, you know.
Yes.
You see the buses with flattened scrugs in those buses, man, they're just sitting next to each other eating a sandwich, you know. Now, I mean, oh my God.
Now the luxury coaches and the private airplanes. But yeah, when you wrote American Pie about the tragic death of Buddy Holly in 1959 and Ritchie Valens and the Big Bopper, at that time they were doing the buses, and then they said we're going to get an airplane and make it to Iowa, I think it was.
The thing is that they were singing every single night, and Buddy Holly had to do his laundry. So he took a plane, but he would only get a few extra hours to do his laundry, and he had to sing that night. So he wasn't going to gain anything. It wasn't like he was jetting off to have a few days off. There were no days off. There was frostbite. You know, there were broken down buses. This was as bad as it gets, and this was Fargo in North Dakota when winter was winter, you know, mm-hmm. in 1959. Oh, Lord. And one, the drummer did get frostbite. But, you know, I have to say one thing. I'm a bit of a stoic. You know, I like simple things. I mean, I am a wealthy man, but I've always lived way below my means, and I've never thought of myself that way. But after all those years of, you know, doing pretty well, it's added up, you know. But when I see things like private planes and yachts and buses that are, you know, multi-million dollar. I don't particularly like that. You know,
right.
I like Pete Seeger. He used to have his banjo and his guitar on his back, you know, and he would churn up at a school and take his banjo out and he had his microphone and he'd start playing and talking and telling a story and then getting the audience to sing and this and that.
Mm-hmm.
That was what I liked, you know, and the more decadent it's gotten, I think the worse it's gotten.
Right.
I think that that's the song the American boys invented rock and roll. I mean, they were all country boys. They were all looking at working, you know, in a cotton field or plowing turnips or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So being on the road and making a couple $1,000 a night was not a hard thing for them to do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they didn't realize that you could do too much of it and you'd be so tired that you'd fall victim to taking, you know, stimulants and so on. And that's what happened to Elvis. You know, He couldn't make his body do the show anymore. So he was forcing his body to do what it didn't want to do. It needed rest.
I read where he was taking medicine to wake himself up and when he was taking medicine to put himself to sleep. So just too much, too much.
But again, he was poor and he couldn't see ending this life that he'd been fortunate enough to get with, you know, to be able to have this kind of income and cars and all these things that a poor boy wants, you know. But I did see one thing with a 50 Cent, you know, was on TV and he said he was pretty smart. He said he bought Mike Tyson's mansion. You know, it said like 40 rooms and, you know, 100
$50 million dollars.
Yeah. And he said, I don't want a big house anymore. He said, and I said, you know, he learned something. He said, I don't, first of all, too many people in the house. He said, I don't know who's in the house. You know, it's just too big, you know, right. And it's like Elvis's song, too much, you know, it's too much. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I knew that from the very beginning, because I was lucky enough to have been brought up a certain way. And I bought a little farmhouse that I lived in for 20 years. And I'd ride my horses and shoot my guns off sometimes. And I had my vegetable garden and I had my animals and I was never happier, you know, in this environment. 3 acres, that's all. Mm. And then I moved to a much bigger place in Maine at 175 acres because I was very into architecture. And so I wanted to restore this entire, it had many buildings on it. And I loved it. You know, it took me 30 years to fully restore this place and to furnish the house and the way I wanted it and the right wallpaper and everything. And so that was another phase, but big is not always better. And one of the things I think that's not good about our country is this big, you know, more, win, you know, there's so much more to life than this, you know, I mean,
Yep. And we've become a much more materialistic society where it's
not good for people, you know, to think that way.
Agreed.
You know, I don't think they get a lot of value out of living, you know, if all is dollars, you know, and I don't know.
Yep. But look at Ohtani just signed $700 million to play for the Dodgers.
The Dodgers got sold?
No, the Dodgers got a pitcher for $700 million.
Oh, my God. I know Jackie Autry, Gene Autry's widow.
Yes.
And she was kind enough to take me and some friends to a game at the stadium in Anaheim. The Angels were there. And they had a guy there they paid, you know, a couple hundred million for, who's a wizard, apparently. Big, tall guy who is a great pitcher and a great hitter and all that. So he didn't do any hitting or pitching when I saw him, but, you know, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, and that is the same guy that I'm talking about. Shohei Ohtani was on the Angels. Now he's been traded to the Dodgers.
For that much money?
For $700 million.
Oh, for the love of God.
So I wanted to ask you, are you thinking about writing a memoir, your tell-all, your biography?
No. I've got two books out. One is called American Troubadour. It's kind of a coffee table book. And it ends just before my disastrous divorce. So everything was hunky-dory at that point. The other book is a strict biography, a career biography. And I wanted to get all the facts straight as I could. And a man named Alan Howard, who is my dear friend in London, who was my webmaster for 25 or years or so. He's one of those British people that knows every single detail, and he's wonderful. So he wrote the books.
Now, you mentioned divorce, and then I know you were in the tabloids for a little while about being with a 25-year-old. Are you still with that 25-year-old?
Yes.
Wow.
We're still
You're my hero.
We've been together for almost 9 years, and she's the love of my life. And We just adopted a dog, so we're really rolling.
Congratulations on that. Don McLean's talking to us. Christmas Memories Remixed and Remastered. That's the name of the new album. Favorite Christmas songs of all time. What are they? You put them on the album, so tell me about them.
Well, there's a variety of songs. There's a kind of a jazzy selection of the Christmas waltz, and which is very swinging, and Let It Snow, which also swings, and with a little like quintet kind of thing, and background singers though, and there's stuff in there. It's very big productions, and then the more, you know, Hollywood ones, you know, Santa Claus Is Coming to Town, Winter Wonderland, White Christmas is one of my favorite songs of all time. I'll tell you an interesting thing. I grew up in New Rochelle, New York. Larchmont Woods, actually, is where I grew up, a very upper class suburb of New York City in Westchester County. That's why doing what I ended up doing with my life was strictly against the rules. Nobody was in favor of me doing what I was doing, but nobody cared that much about me anyway, so they didn't really care if I did it. But they really, I got some big static from all over the place. You know, how dare I, you know, drop out of this and do this, what I was doing. Anyway, in a big house, it was almost like a Tudor mansion, I believe lived J. Fred Coots, who wrote Santa Claus Is Coming to Town. And my father would drive by there and he would say, Donnie, do you know who lives there? And I would say, no. He said, well, the man who wrote Santa Claus Is Coming to Town, and do you know his family goes all over the world and they just have money to spend in every country. They spend the money that accumulates there. That's what they do. He couldn't believe it. If my father had lived to see what happened to me, I mean, he would never have believed it.
Well, Christmas music lives on forever.
It does.
And it's, you know, it's always so popular to listen to. In fact, the number one song on the chart right now, on the Billboard chart, is Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree.
I wish they play and push Blue Christmas, our version, because it swings. It's good.
I want to hear it. I definitely want to hear it. I'm going to look forward to it. The new album is Don McLean Christmas Memories Remixed and Remastered. And before I let you go, because I know today's a press day for you and you probably got other interviews, is tell me if you have a message for our audience, which includes the troops, if you have the worldwide audience that are celebrating a variety of different holidays. Right now, what does Christmas mean to you? Do you have a message that you'd like to send?
Yeah, well, you know, lately I've been thinking about the beauty of the year, how it's all been worked out. You start in the, you know, cold of January with a brand new year ahead of you, and you move into the beautiful springtime, and then you have the hot days of summer and glorious summer and swimming and boats and the sunshine, and then the fall. And, you know, well, the fall always comes. I wrote a song called When July Comes, because the 4th of July comes and then almost the summer's over. It just happens fast.
Yes.
And it always happens faster than you think it should. It's almost this story of life every single year. And then you're into the Thanksgiving and the leaves are turning and it's poignant and football games, I guess. And in my case, I always really do think about how thankful I am for everything that's happened to me. Even the bad things that have happened to me have been good for me. I needed that in some way, and I realized that. And now, and then you move into Christmas, which is really a time of forgiveness, a time of trying to understand other people, getting outside yourself, loving other people. And it's a beautiful way to end the year. And on that beautiful December, and we have then we start all over again. So yes. That's why those songs are so inspired, because that's how people feel.
Mm-hmm. And what's Christmas like in the McLean household? I mean, you get the kids back, the grandkids, what's going on?
No, I'll just be out here with Paris, you know, and we have their family and we have our dog and we have a lot of presents, a lot of money. I'm going to spend a lot of money. I know that.
Well, spend some on me.
Okay.
Thank you, Don McLean, for being with us today. It's always a pleasure to catch up with you.
Thank you.
And I'm very excited. Christmas Memories, remixed and remastered by the Don McLean, who's Thank with you. Us right now on the show. Thank you again. And happy holidays to you and your family. And all Thank the best you. To you. And I look forward to talking to you again the next time when you have the next project coming
I look forward to talking
up.
To you, too. Very nice. I mean that.
Thank you, Don. Don McLean. My name is Larry London, and this is Border Crossings on VOA TV.